In just a moment, Generations with Kevin Swanson. But first, this. The World View in 5 minutes.
It's Wednesday, July 27th, 2016 AD. This is The World View in 5 minutes. I'm Adam McManus. Despite Senator Bernie Sanders' insistence that his supporters get behind Hillary Clinton, his call for unity at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia was met with boos on Monday night.
We have got to elect Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine.
Interestingly, Sanders told NBC News this past June, even after Clinton was declared the presumptive nominee, that he was the best candidate to defeat Donald Trump in November. First Lady Michelle Obama, in an emotional speech on Monday at the Democratic National Convention, insisted that this election is about more government involvement over the lives of our children.
This election is about who will have the power to shape our children for the next 4 or 8 years of their lives.
In an interview with PBS, Republican vice presidential nominee Mike Pence reaffirmed Trump's promise to select pro-life justices to the Supreme Court.
Donald Trump is pro-life, and I believe in the sanctity of life. And we've had some heart-to-heart conversations about the Supreme Court of the United States and about the importance of making sure that our next president appoints justices to the Supreme Court who will not only uphold the rule of law, but will advance the principles enshrined in the Constitution of the United States. I'm grateful for Donald Trump's pro-life views, and I'm grateful that he's expressed those views so publicly and openly.
The Defense Intelligence Agency has confirmed with Fox News that Russia is likely the source of the 20,000 leaked emails from the Democratic National Committee, which led to the resignation of DNC Chief Debbie Wasserman Schultz. A Christian man who was once brutalized by Muslims now devotes his life to sharing the gospel with his persecutors, bringing thousands to Christ. Christian Aid Mission reports that Brother Rashid became a Christ follower at the age of 12 after hearing the gospel through a radio ministry, followed by 4 years of correspondence courses. Furious at their son for turning his back on the Muslim faith, Rashid's devout parents kicked him out of his home, leaving him homeless for 2 years, and then taken in by a missionary family. Rashid was forced to flee Morocco just a few years later after a radical Islamist infiltrated his house church, threatening his life. Once his wife, who was pregnant with their first child, was safe in a different country, he felt the Lord calling him to go back and minister to Muslims. Rashid had opened the book of Acts and asked, "Didn't these people preaching Christ also have families? If we don't do it, who's going to do it?" It was 9:45 a.m. Tuesday morning. Father Jacques Samel, an 84-year-old French priest, had just finished delivering his homily when two young ISIS-affiliated Muslim terrorists stormed the church shouting "Allahu Akbar." The radical Islamist killers, one of whom was a 19-year-old Frenchman, forced the Catholic priest to his knees and slit his throat while filming their grisly savagery in the church near the Normandy city of Rouen. For 2 years, ISIS has pledged to bring its war on the West into the very sanctuaries of Christianity. Deuteronomy 32:35 reminds us that God will avenge this priest. In due time, their foot will slip, their day of disaster is near, and their doom rushes upon them. 4,000 Nigerian Christians have been killed in 2015 alone, and tragically, the bloodshed and violence is not slowing down, but growing exponentially. The failure of the Nigerian government to prosecute the Islamic radical factions like Boko Haram and the Muslim Fulani herdsmen only serves to embolden them, reports the Christian Post. Good news on the pro-life front. The LA Times reports that Texas Judge Brock Thomas dismissed the last remaining politically motivated charge yesterday against 27-year-old David DeLeiden and 63-year-old Sandra Merritt, the two pro-life activists who made undercover videos showing Planned Parenthood officials selling baby body parts. Amos 5:24 says, "Let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream." A new A&E reality program is putting a positive edge on young people with Down syndrome. The program follows 7 adults living with the genetic disorder and doing very well, thank you very much. One of the stars in the show, Sean McElwee, was pretty excited when he saw the billboard on Sunset Boulevard in Los Angeles. He posted a pic of himself with outstretched arms and a big smile and wrote, "My mom took me to see my billboard. Thank you, Jesus." It's the world's deepest underwater sinkhole, located in the South China Sea in the Paracel Islands. The Xinhua news agency reported that after nearly a year of exploration, Chinese researchers have determined that the underwater sinkhole is 987 feet below the surface, surpassing the previous record holder, Dean's Blue Hole near the Bahamas, by more than 300 feet. And that's The World View on this Wednesday, July 27th in the year of our Lord, 2016. Invite your friends to listen to this unique Christian newscast at theworldview.com. I'm Adam McManus. Seize the day for Jesus Christ.
Friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today. As once again, we turn our attention back to climate science, not because this is a major issue for us, but it is a major issue for the left, and it's coming up in the Democratic National Convention. It's probably an important element of the Democratic National Party's platform. And Secretary of State John Kerry was in Vienna over the weekend. And he said that air conditioners and refrigerators now pose a big threat, as big a threat to life on the planet as the threat of terrorism. That's the Secretary of State John Kerry just over the weekend. Kerry was in Vienna negotiating a global climate deal to phase out chemicals used as refrigerants in basic household and commercial appliances such as air conditioning, refrigerators, etc., etc. And it also turns out that the liberal assault on the freedom of speech is taking on anybody who wants to question the global warming religious orthodoxy of the day, from the emperor's new clothes pseudoscientism of the day. And Washington Times, this is a recent article, can you believe this? Attorney generals from around the United States, not all of them, but some percentage of the attorney generals from respective states across the United States have announced plans to investigate for evidence of criminal wrongdoing groups who dared to question assertions on man-made global warming. And the Democratic Party platform is calling for the Department of Justice to investigate companies who disagree with Democrats on global warming science. And by the way, the latest temperature records indicate a massive drop in the global temperature levels during the past 2 months, helped by the receding El Nino and the fast approaching La Nina. So the last 2 month drop of 0.37 degrees centigrade in global average temperature May to June was the second largest in 37 years of recorded history. So just a little tidbit data point for you. And on top of that, here, Senator Tim Kaine, who, as many of you know, is the vice president candidate with Hillary Clinton, has referred to the Christian organization that we're going to interview in just a moment, the Cornwall Alliance for Stewardship of Creation, and Tim Kaine is referring to this organization, Cornwall Alliance, as part of a web of denial, a shadow organization, bizarro and greedy. Okay, these are the adjectives used to describe the Cornwall Alliance by Senator Tim Kaine on the Senate floor, and that was just last week. Senator Kaine was quoting a piece of Cornwall Alliance's open letter to Pope Francis on climate change, which, by the way, he didn't mention was signed by hundreds of scientists, including over 20 climate scientists. Well, the president and founder of Cornwall Alliance is now joining us on the Generations broadcast. Calvin Beisner has been working on this issue for a very long time for the benefit of Christians around the world. And for the benefit of people who want to maintain something of a rational use of science itself. Calvin, welcome back to the Generations broadcast. It's good to have you with us again today.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It's a privilege to be back on the show with you. I always enjoy it. And by the way, while I wish I could take the title of president, I don't have those skills. I'm founder and national spokesman. Okay. We don't even have a president, which indicates just how far Tim Kaine is from being right in describing us as a greedy organization. Yeah. He can't afford a president.
Yeah, I can't afford a president. Yeah. Okay, well, why are they coming after you? Why is the left so up in arms over this that they would infringe upon the rights of free speech for those who take a different position on the orthodoxy of climate change or global warming? Why is this the issue du jour?
Well, because, frankly, the idea of dangerous man-made global warming driven by our use of fossil fuels to produce energy is probably the best rationale for promoting an extremely expansive view of government that the left can get. Because essentially what it is it is an excuse for government to control everything that we do in the production, the distribution, and the consumption of energy. Well, that happens to be involved in everything that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Everything we do takes energy, whether it's the energy we get from the food that we eat that keeps our bodies going, or the energy we use from the electricity in our homes and our factories and our offices, when you flip a light switch, when you push an elevator button, when you turn your computer on, when you pick up your phone and call somebody, whether it's the energy that we use in our cars and trucks and trains and everything else, everything we do takes energy. And so frankly, if you can get a good excuse, an excuse that voters will swallow for controlling everything about the production, the distribution, and the consumption of energy, well, essentially, you've got voters to swallow an excuse for government to control every aspect of their lives. And hey, if you are a leftist, if you are somebody who's got an expansive notion of government controlling everybody's life, essentially, if you're an idolater of the state, boy, this is the best vehicle you could ever hope for.
I don't think people realize how powerful the power impulse is in mankind. Well, since the Tower of Babel, when man said, go to, let us make a tower, let us make a name for ourselves, let us centralize power. Power mongering is a powerful impulse that works in the craw of many a human being, especially those in Washington, D.C., and these totalitarian wannabes are going to prostitute science. They will destroy science for their power mongering agenda. Is it possible?
Yeah. Well, this is really, you've hit the nail right on the head there, Kevin, because this is one of the fundamental distinctions between a Christian mindset and a worldly mindset. Jesus said, with the Gentiles, they lord over each other. Mm-hmm. But he reminded us, if you want to be great in the kingdom of heaven, you need to learn to be the servant of all. And so, a Christian mindset doesn't say, how can I have power over other people? Instead, the Christian mindset says, how can I liberate other people? How can I make sure that I don't interfere with other people doing what they want to do, so long as, frankly, they're not injuring their neighbors in the process? That means the Christian mindset is going to be very favorable to freedom. The non-Christian mindset is going to be very favorable to bondage.
Hmm. Calvin, as I consider the scientific battles of the day over evolution, climate change, etc., I keep coming back to this principle, and I know my listeners are well familiar with my position on these issues, but it always comes back to the fundamental concern that I have with modern science taught at Harvard or Yale or MIT or what have you, and that is that science is not taught in the fear of God. Basically, when you develop a science, whether it be evolution or the science of climate change or what have you, in laboratories or in classrooms – where the fear of God is not the beginning of knowledge and wisdom, I get the weebie-jeebies. I get I get a concern that perhaps man, sans the fear of God and with his overweening pride, will create for himself a hell on earth with his science if it's not done in the fear of God. Do you maintain that basic foundational perspective of science yourself?
Oh, absolutely. And, C.S. Lewis discussed that beautifully in his book, The Abolition of Man, how science in the hands of those who want to dominate others becomes a tool for the destruction of liberty. He actually writes about how the idea of the conquest of nature in the hands of those who don't have a biblical Christian worldview really becomes the conquest of man. And what that turns into is the conquest of most people by some people. We have discussed this also in our new documentary video called Where the Grass is Greener, Biblical Stewardship versus Climate Alarmism. We have a number of different parts of that video in which, by the way, we've interviewed over 30 really world-class scholars on the science, the economics, the politics of global warming, global climate change policy and energy policy. And a number of these interviews include looking at how Christianity provides the foundation for science itself. If you don't believe that a rational God created an ordered universe to be understood by rational people made in his image, then you can't have science start in the first place, which is why science only started once in history in one place, and that was medieval Europe, undergirded by this biblical Christian worldview. And then we also point out that as people forsake that worldview at the base of science, science becomes irrational. You know, if you've got a naturalist worldview where you say, look, all that exists is matter and energy and motion, then, frankly, you don't have any reason to think that there's any such thing as reason. You know, if two billiard balls meet on a table, they don't exactly sit down, have a nice cup of tea, and say, hey, where are you going next after this? Which way do you want to go? Which way should I go? No, they exchange energy, and so they ricochet off of each other, and they go in particular directions at particular speeds, and there is absolutely no reasoning about it whatsoever. Well, if that's all that's going on in our brains, if we just have electrochemical impulses happening, then there is no rationality involved, and there is no reason for any idea that we have. There is no reason involved in any argument that we put forth. All there is force. Well, that's exactly why there is so much that's going on in the scientific world that is thoroughly irrational now. Theoretical physicists talking about the universe coming into existence out of nothing because, after all, out of nothing the odds were that somehow something would come. I mean, this is just craziness. But it's also part of the reason why you get kind of activity that you just were describing with these attorneys general, with these politicians like Senator Nelson Whitehouse, a Democrat from Rhode Island, or Senator Tim Kaine, now the VP presidential pick for Hillary Clinton on the Democrat ticket, who want to squelch freedom of thought, freedom of debate, freedom of speech as to the reality, the causes, the magnitude, the benefits and costs, and the best responses to global warming. If you don't have a theistic worldview to undergird your understanding that there is such a thing as real reasoning, then you don't really want to resort to reasoning. You want to resort to force instead, because that's all your worldview supports.
Let's try to establish at least a few facts, as best as we understand them, concerning global warming and climate change. And here's the basic question from the outset. Is the Earth warmer than it was in 1990? Is the Earth warmer than it was in 1890? And is it warmer than it was in 1490? And how do we know?
Great questions. The how do we know is, I think, perhaps one of the most crucial questions, because, frankly, we don't have even really strong confidence for what we think we know even now about global average temperature. The best means that we have of trying to measure that is through satellite remote sensing systems. And those actually are run by two friends of mine, Dr. Roy Spencer, who's a senior fellow of the Cornwall Alliance, and Dr. John Christie, both at the University of Alabama, who run NASA's program to do this. That's the best, and it's the most comprehensive, the most reliable, the most uncontaminated by local problems, local factors. But even that, frankly, has an error margin of a couple tenths of a degree Celsius for global average temperature. For periods before the satellites went up, starting in 1979 when we were able to start doing this, the periods before that, well, we had weather balloons, but they're not all over the world. Mm-hmm. We had, you know, surface temperature thermometers and so on, but they're not all over the world. And before a couple hundred years ago, we didn't even have thermometers.
Okay. So we're
all sorts of proxies.
Uh-huh. So we're really stuck. We're really stuck. Yeah, we have no idea.
Right. So, uh-huh. You know, we've got rough ideas.
Okay.
We do know, mm-hmm. we're pretty confident, for instance, that the so-called medieval warm period, which ran from about 900 to 1300 A.D., was significantly warmer than the late 20th, early 20th century is. We know that, or we're pretty confident, that what's called the Little Ice Age, which ran from about 1350 to about 1850, was significantly cooler than the whole 20th century. We're pretty confident that global average temperature rose from about 1850 to about 2000 by about 8/10 to 1 full degree Celsius. But aside from pretty broad general things like that, everything else, all the other things that people describe, are really getting more precise than we can be confident of in terms of the accuracy of the measuring systems that we use. Mm-hmm. What we also have pretty good confidence of, though, is that the warming that occurred from, say, the late 1970s until 2000 was no faster and didn't go on uninterrupted for any longer than a couple of other warming periods between 1850 and 1980. One running from about 1895 to about 1910, and another running from about 1930 to about 1945. And so if you could have that warming at that rate and for those lengths of time in those periods, and they were not driven by human emissions of carbon dioxide, then there's no particular reason why we need to blame human emissions of carbon dioxide for the warming that occurred post-1980. So, you know, the whole thing is really up for grabs, and the major media don't let you know that, mostly because the journalists don't understand it, and the powers that be in governments around the world don't let you know that, because if we didn't cause the warming, then we can't do anything to stop it. But if we can't do anything to stop it, then we can't use doing something to stop it as an excuse to empower government.
Well, how in the world did we arrive at the quote-unquote scientific consensus that humans are responsible for these catastrophic levels of global warming as a result of the carbon dioxide emissions from the use of fossil fuels? How did that come about?
By a combination of some fairly weak science and some very powerful marketing of ideas.
Uh-huh.
The fairly weak science says, well, carbon dioxide is an infrared, that is, heat-absorbing gas. And so if you add more of that to the atmosphere, you're going to make the atmosphere a little bit warmer than it otherwise would be. Well, okay, that's fine. That's basic physics, and we understand that. And I don't know anybody among the skeptics of global warming, and I know most of them, by the way, but I don't know among the, you know, the leading scientists and so on. I don't know anybody who denies that. But basic physics also tells you that if you drop a rock and a feather at the same moment from the same height, they're going to hit the bottom at the same moment, unless, of course, they're in the air. And, of course, if it's windy, the feather might blow up into a tree and never come down at all. So we're not just talking about basic physics here. We're talking about how the entire climate system, which is probably the most complicated natural system we've ever studied, with the possible exception of a human brain, we're talking about how the whole climate system responds to a little bit of added CO2. So, you know, the weak science says, okay, you add CO2, you must make it a little warmer. Well, we're going to say that all the heat that's, you know, all the warmth that has come over the last 20 years has been because of that. Well, that's not good science. But the big marketing, the powerful marketing, comes in when you have organizations like the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which a lot of people think is scientific, but is really primarily political. It's dominated by political appointees from governments all around the world. The IPCC grabs onto that basic idea and says, hey, look, you know, this is going to be really dangerous, and therefore we'd better stop it. And to stop it, we need to switch from fossil fuels to renewables like wind and solar in order to reduce CO2 emissions. And that begins to tie into political agendas with those who have this expansive view of government that I mentioned before. They see government as wanting to control more aspects of our lives. Well, if you can control the production, consumption, and distribution of energy, you can control pretty much everything we do.
Can you make the argument that the increase carbon dioxide that is human-produced can have actually positive results?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. First, just think in terms of the temperature. History tells us that particularly once air conditioning got developed, people tend to want to live in warmer climates rather than colder climates. That's what people do, not only as they age, but all through their lives. They tend to move from colder places to warmer places because life is simply more comfortable, and it's even actually healthier, tends to be longer. So that's one thing to look at. Another thing to look at from temperatures is that as the world warms, growing seasons lengthen. That is, the last frost comes later in the spring, the earliest frost comes later in the fall. And so with lengthened growing seasons, you can have more crops, you can have more food production. But besides that, the areas that you can farm expand as well. You can farm farther north and south, you can farm higher altitudes. So those are good. But in addition, the added CO2 into the atmosphere has a fertilizing effect. We know from thousands of empirical studies, actual experiments, that for every doubling of CO2 concentration in the atmosphere, you get an average 35% increase in plant growth efficiency. They grow better in hotter and colder temperatures and in wetter and drier soils. They make better use of soil nutrients. They resist diseases and pests better, and they improve their fruit-to-fiber ratio. And that means more food for everything that eats plants and more food for everything that eats something that eats plants. And the ones who benefit from the most are the weakest and most vulnerable, whether we're talking about animals or human beings. The poor are the ones who benefit the most from this. So rising CO2 is actually a beneficial thing. And frankly, the empirical studies of how much added warmth comes from the added CO2 are increasingly showing that it's a very, very tiny amount. For a doubling of CO2, probably in the range of half a degree to a degree and three quarters, rather than the degree and a half to 4.5 degrees that the UN IPCC has been claiming. So there's just no remaining good reason to have fears about it, especially because the computer models on which the IPCC relies, they have been invalidated. On average, they predict 2 to 3 times as much warming as actually observed over the relevant period. 95% predict more warming than actually occurred. If they were, if the errors were random, they would be as frequently below as above, so they're not random. They're driven by some sort of bias. And none of them predicted the complete absence of any warming from about February 1997 to about November or December of 2015, period of almost 19 years. So that means the models are invalidated. Yeah. They therefore provide no rational basis for predictions about future temperature and no rational basis for any policy.
Dr. Beisner, I want to focus on the destructive elements of tyranny, Gentile-type leadership. Especially this insidious element of liberalism, where liberals seem to find backhanded ways to tyrannize and disenfranchise the poor. We certainly find that in the case of the LBJ welfare programs in the inner cities over 30 to 40 years. That's been proven very, very, very well throughout the last generation or two. But now, in this area of climate change, does climate change and the agenda that is being foisted upon the nations by the climate change group, does that have negative effects on the poor? You've written on this before, so I'd like you to explain
Absolutely.
It a little bit.
Yeah, certainly. I think we get the best historical example of it from the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom, starting in the early 2000s, adopted a very, very strict policy of closing down coal-fired electric generating plants and replacing them with wind and solar for electric generating. And the result was rapidly rising electricity rates all around the United Kingdom, more than doubling over a period of about 8 years. Well, the result of that was that lots of people on low and fixed incomes could no longer afford both to heat their homes adequately in the winter and to get the food, clothing, other things that they need to make life safe and enjoyable. Mm-hmm. As a consequence, there was a tremendous increase in the excess winter death rate. Now, epidemiologists speak in terms of the fact that always you have more people dying in the winter than you do in the summer because cold temperatures are hard on people with diseases and who are simply weak because of age. That yields what's called the excess premature winter death rate. And in the UK, typically prior to this period, that had run 7,000 to 10,000 people a year. After those increases in electricity rates, that excess premature winter death rate jumped to 25,000 to 35,000 per year over the winters.
Wow!
So in other words, it more than tripled the excess premature winter death rate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could apply that to the United States by taking into account the fact that our population is about five times that of the UK, and much of our land is much colder in the winter than is any part of the UK. So consequently, you could expect that the increase in excess premature winter deaths in the United States would be, instead of about three or four times, it would run probably four to five times, meaning that instead of about 25 or 35,000 deaths per year, we'd be looking at 150 to 200,000 extra deaths per year. That's what happens when you drive energy rates up by adopting the far less abundant, affordable, reliable source of energy, which is wind and solar, and abandoning the coal and natural gas that are the most abundant, affordable, reliable source for generating electricity that we have, aside from nuclear, which is beyond the technological capacity of a lot of developing nations that at this point lack electricity for most of their people at all. And also, of course, has the risk that spent fuel can be weaponized, and so you don't want that running around. So, you know, the call to keep it in the ground, which has become sort of a motto for the Democrats, just leave the coal, oil, and natural gas in the ground, that call to keep it in the ground is basically a call to keep poor people around the world poor forever and to drive a whole lot of people just a bit above poverty in the developed world back down into it.
And we haven't talked about the hundreds of millions of others around the world in Africa and elsewhere who are affected by bad environmental policy on the part of the left. We've just talked about the effects in the Western world, and certainly this agenda, this liberal agenda, is an insidious agenda, has very destructive effects, evil effects, and it comes out of bad science. I think that's the point we want to land on this edition of the program. As man develops his science and his politics, sans the fear of God as the beginning of knowledge, the effects are devastating, friends. We're talking about hundreds of millions of deaths around the world because of bad science and bad politics. And it is incumbent upon Christians to engage these areas of thinking from a distinctively biblical perspective. Calvin, do you want to just land the program by exhorting Christians to action, whether it be in science or politics? What would you say to them?
Well, I would say the first thing we need to do is to get well informed. You know, you cannot obey the Apostle Paul's instruction in 1 Thessalonians 5:21 to test all things, hold fast what is good, if you're not well informed. And that's why the Cornwall Alliance exists. CornwallAlliance.org has lots of articles and substantial papers and other information sources by our network of about 60 scholars, all solid Christians, about a third of them natural scientists, a third economists, and a third theologians and ethicists and the like. And we have just a huge amount of very, very helpful information there, cornwallalliance.org. And then also, I mentioned earlier, our new documentary video called Where the Grass is Greener, Biblical Stewardship versus Climate Alarmism. That's available both at our website, cornwallalliance.org, and at its own website, wherethegrassisgreenerthemovie.com. That's wherethegrassisgreenerthemovie.com. So getting informed is really crucial. And then you really have to be active as well. We have to recognize that that this push to use fears of dangerous global warming to justify expansive government control over energy production, distribution, and consumption. This push is one of the greatest threats, not just to prosperity, but also to freedom itself, to liberty. We see it in the call to muzzle those who would question this, the threat, the intimidation that's going on by these attorney generals who are threatening investigation and prosecution of climate skeptics. But we see it also even simply in the fact that the more the government controls the production, distribution, and consumption of energy, the more it controls our very lives. So this is an issue of both freedom and prosperity. And finally, it's an issue of our concern for the poor and vulnerable around the world. To adopt the policies to fight global warming that the UN IPCC wants, that were agreed in the Paris Treaty last December, to adopt those policies is essentially to condemn the about 3 billion poorest people in the world to continue poor for generations to come. And it's to push hundreds of millions of people in developed countries back down into poverty with the high rates of disease and premature death that invariably come from that. For biblical Christians who would agree with the Apostle Paul in Galatians 2:10 that we must always remember the poor, that's just not an option. So we cannot be silent. Proverbs 24:12 and following tells us we cannot say, well, we didn't know, so we didn't act. No, we know, and we need to act to oppose this kind of thing.
Well, we appreciate the work that Cornwall Alliance has done over the years. These are voices crying in the wilderness a bit because the power agenda, it works very, very hard. But friends, throughout history, we find that a very small minority have always been used by God to bring about the protection and the preservation of freedom and liberty, and of course, the resultant prosperity as well. So these are the blessings that come when there are those who will stand in the gap and continue to raise up biblical principle in an era in which socialism, humanism, and the leadership style of the Gentiles seem to prevail. Dr. Calvin Beisner from the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation has been our guest today. CornwallAlliance.org is the website you want to go to for more education on these issues. Calvin, thanks again for joining us on the Generations broadcast.
Kevin, thanks very much to you, and God bless you in your continued ministry.
This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.